Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your taxes today with Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. She and her husband, David, have been in tax business for more than 30 years, serve individuals, they consult tax professionals, they teach tax seminars across the country, and as always, she's happy to answer your tax questions. So, what would you like to know about 2016? What's the best way to turn in your taxes or to save on your taxes? I hope you'll join us. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Mary Mellum, welcome back.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
I had the chance to write my property tax check, put that in the mail about a week ago. I always pay once a year right at the end, and it's always a little shock to the system, but you know what? I know I can put that on as something I can take off my taxes.
That's correct. It's an itemized deduction. As long as you itemize your deductions, it will give you a deduction on the federal. And even if you don't itemize your deductions, it will give you a deduction on the state.
Yeah. So that's the good part of, or one of the good parts, I guess I should say. What other things should we be doing or thinking about here? We've still got a week to go, a week and a half to go. I know there's one charitable donation I make to the University of Wisconsin. I always do it the last week of the year.
It is important, if you're going to make charitable contributions, that you get them in by 12/31 and that you get an acknowledgement of that donation before you file your tax returns.
Yeah.
And that could mean giving cash, you know, making credit card payments to places, or it could mean cleaning the closets and getting them over to one of the charitable organizations that accepts used goods.
Yeah, I have a pile of my daughter's clothes that she has outgrown, and they'll be on their way to...
And remember, if you're doing the used goods, it is important to get a receipt from the organization as well as keeping a list with that of the items that you have given.
Yeah, you need individual items.
You need to list the individual items. IRS is very touchy about charitable contributions. They have been since about 2005. And without proper documentation, upon audit, they will disallow those deductions. So yeah, it is so important to do that.
What about, what other things? Contributions to investments, perhaps? Is there something you can do there?
Well, you can make IRA contributions, but IRA contributions can be made up to April 15th, as well as HSA, the health savings accounts, if people have those. Those contributions are kind of the after the fact. You can always make those as long as you make them by April 15th.
Okay, so we're good there. Anything else that we should, just off the top of your head, that we should think about?
Let's see. If you're going to open up a pension plan and maybe want to contribute to it later, you would have to open the pension plan before the end of the year. Now, SEP plans for small businesses, they can do those after the end of the year. But if you wanted to open up like a 401k or something like that, you would have to open that before the end of the year, and maybe some of the contributions would be allowed after the end of the year, but it would have to be opened.
What is the just as business about itemizing, and then we're going to go on to Candy and Eau Claire, but there are some pretty good advantages to itemizing deductions rather than taking a standard deduction.
Well, the standard deduction this year for a married couple is $12,600. And if your itemized deductions are greater than that $12,600, and I'm talking married couple right now, if they are greater than that, it is to your advantage to take the greater number.
So, yeah, so you really do need to do some figuring.
You need to do some figuring. It all depends on your situation. Typically, if you own a home and have a mortgage and pay property taxes, those are usually the most likely candidate to itemize. But there are other situations. Maybe you're a traveling salesperson, or maybe you're a highly paid individual where you have a lot of withholding. All of those things factor into it.
Candy and Eau Claire, let's go to you now. Thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a daughter with special needs, and we open enroll her to another district, and we drive about 60 miles one way to school and then 60 miles home. And I'm wondering if there's any way to deduct that expense since we are providing the transportation for her.
In the special needs, are you doing it because there isn't any provision of that special needs in your particular area, or are you doing it just because you choose to?
I guess a little bit of both. She probably wouldn't have been successful in our home district.
Well,
so
let me tell you the law. If taking her to a class that is not offered locally, generally your travel would be allowed as a medical deduction.
Oh.
Not as education, but as a medical deduction.
Interesting.
And if you have to have special classes and you pay for those special classes for medical expenses, that would be where the deduction would be allowed. Now, you know, you may be in a touchy area if the same things are available nearby and you, as you mentioned, open enrollment, chose to go somewhere else, then, you know, then you may be on touchy...
Thinner ice.
Thin ice. Good point.
Yeah.
In a situation like that. But in general terms, the provision of education when there are special needs is a medical expense rather than an education expense.
Mm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And there may be, out of all the classes she takes, there may be one that's not offered, and in which case that could count.
Yeah. It just depends on the situation. But yeah. When you take special classes, and they can go, they can be physical things, they can be anger management, they can be, you know, special
yeah.
drug-related needs, things like that. If you are traveling for that and costing for it, it's part of a medical expense.
There we go. Thank you, Candy. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Todd in Rhinelander up next. Hi, Todd. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is, I'm looking at receiving a fairly large workers' compensation settlement payment, and I'm wondering, and it's probably not going to come until 2017, early January, but I'm wondering, is that something that I'm going to have to pay income tax on or not?
The answer to that is workers' comp is not a taxable event.
Even as a settlement, it's not.
If it's workers' comp, it would not be a taxable event.
No.
Was there any payment during this time that was received from another source that has been recharacterized as workers' comp?
Okay. No, this is a straightforward workers' comp situation.
Okay. Workers' comp is not taxable.
Very good.
All right. Good news for you, Todd. Thanks. Thanks very much for calling. Arlene in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Arlene.
Thank you. I enjoy your show, and Happy New Year and Christmas to all of you. My question is, if I donate to certain organizations like the Humane Society, Oceans, whatever, and a couple of other ones, and I do not use my credit card, I use my duplicate checking. So if I, when I go into the tax office, is it feasible for me to take the carbon copy of the duplicate checking to use as credit for donating money
yes.
to?
Yes, in certain circumstances. It depends on the size of your donation. It is always better to have a thank you letter from the organization. But you are able to use your check if your donation to the organization is less than $250.
If it's less than 200, it'll be tax deductible, right?
If it is less than 250, you can use your check as a receipt for the donation. Now, if you were going to give them, let's say, $490, and you said, oh, if I write two checks, they're less than 250, that's not skirting the issue. That's trying to manipulate tax law.
No.
So if it's going to be over 250, then get that letter from the organization or have it at hand when you file your taxes.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate the answer.
Thanks very
You're
much
welcome.
For calling. Yeah, I've got my little folder, and when those thank yous come in, they go right to my tax folder for the year, and then...
That's the best way to do it.
I run upstairs to my file cabinet and put it in, and sometimes I'm surprised. Oh, I did give that back in.
IRS is very fussy in the fact that if they, after the fact, question something, a person cannot go back to the organization at that time and get their letter after the fact. It has to come to them before they file their tax returns. It has to be in their hand.
Oh, all right. Well, we have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. And let's see what we got from Paul here. Question, he says, my wife and I each have an HSA account and have made the maximum contribution possible for the past 4 years. Normally, our HSA contributions for 2016 can be made any time up to April 15th, 2017. However, I turn 65 in January and start Medicare on January 1 of the coming year. I see that someone on Medicare can no longer contribute to an HSA, so I know I will no longer be able to make contributions for 2017. But can I still make my contribution for 2016 next year when I'm on Medicare, or must I make that contribution by the end of this year before Medicare begins the next day?
The contribution for 2016, which is what he is asking, is based on his status in 2016, and he can make that contribution for the prior year up to April 15th.
Oh, okay. There we go.
So the Medicare says that in 17, because he's covered under Medicare, he can no longer make contributions into his HSA. If his wife is younger, she certainly can continue.
All right. Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She's been in the tax business a long time, knows a lot. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals and are enrolled agents. KP Whaley, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mealer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 2 o'clock today on the Kathleen Dunn Show, the author of the book The Virgin Vote offers a history lesson on how young Americans vote and debunks the myth that young voters are often unreliable. Right now, talking with Mary Mellum about your taxes, let's go to Doug in La Crosse. Doug, hi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
We bought a home earlier this year, actually, a combination of cash and a HELOC on my primary house as a home for my son to live in until his divorce gets finalized. So I have that home's in our name, and we're paying the property taxes on it. I assume I can deduct the HELOC off my primary interest expense off the primary home. My question is, can I also deduct the taxes I'm paying on the home we purchased earlier this year?
Okay. Let me get to the bottom of this. You have a principal residence that you live in.
Yes.
And this home that you're talking about is a second residence, and it happens to be where your son is living.
Yes.
Okay. The principal residence You're always able to deduct your mortgage interest, and for both first and second residents, for acquisition debt, there's a $1 million limit. Now, if I understood you correctly, you said that you borrowed against your principal residence with this HELOC to buy the second residence.
Yes.
How much was this principal residence debt that you borrowed against it? Was it over $100,000?
It was $100,000.
Okay. Then you will have no problem deducting that because you can use the home equity loans to do anything you want with it.
Okay.
It is always better as acquisition indebtedness. It has to be secured by your principal or your second residence. Since it's not secured by the second residence, it would be what we call home equity debt, and your limitation on that is $100,000.
Okay.
So that does give you that. Property taxes, you're able to deduct the property taxes that you are liable for and pay on any property. So you certainly can on that second residence.
Okay.
Now, I assume there is not another residence that you're already taking second residence interest on also. Is that correct?
There is not.
Okay.
So you're good to go, Doug.
I am good to go. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks so much for calling. Oh, great answer. Travis in Altoona, it's your turn. Hi, Travis.
Good morning to both of you, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question revolves around SSDI. On the paperwork that I received, it said that I didn't have to pay taxes if I made less than, I think it was $25,000 a year off of it. I already know it's going to be less than that. Is it a good idea to pay the taxes up front on it anyway, or don't even bother wasting my time?
Now, the SSDI, I'm assuming that you're talking about Social Security Disability Income. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. As far as there is a potential for withholding on that, if you want, do you have a reason to file an income tax return aside from this Social Security disability?
No, I don't have any other income at this time.
Okay.
That's the only
then
income that I have.
If you were to do withholding, you would have to file a tax return to get it back. So if you have no other reason to file, then I wouldn't do any withholding on it.
And as long as I'm staying any set amount, I should be fine then, right?
Yep.
Right. You can, I mean, there's even more because the Social Security disability, if you have other income and you put it together with it, it may make some of it taxable. And then you have to worry about, is it over the filing requirement?
Well, the only other income that I would have is I get a veteran's disability income every month, which is non-taxable itself.
Right. And so the two of those together, you have no real reason to file unless there's something else going on that I'm not aware of.
Mm-hmm. Nope, that's it.
So I would not be withholding.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a great Christmas, you too.
You as well. Thank you, Travis. Well, lots of good news you've been spreading so far here, Mary.
Oh, just wait, Larry.
Just wait.
We won't be able to do it all the time.
John in Menominee, Michigan, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning and Merry Christmas.
To you as well.
Last year, our federal and state income taxes were hacked. We filed our taxes only to get letters back saying that we had already filed and to resubmit papers, which we did. What should we do from here?
Have you received any letter from the IRS that includes the security code?
No.
Okay. IRS oftentimes will issue a security code. And
a PIN number, yes, but we did not get one.
Okay. I would suggest that you, do you normally electronically file your returns?
No, we file by mail.
Okay. Given that, if it were me, I probably would contact the IRS and ask them, you know, explain the situation. Because you have been in communication, did you get your refund last year after the hacking?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And any correspondence from them?
That was no correspondence after that. We submitted, they said that we had to resubmit our taxes, which we did.
Okay.
In paper form. And subsequently, they mailed us a check.
Okay.
Or deposited, more correctly, in our bank account.
Yeah. Typically, when there's been a stolen identity, the IRS will flag an account, and that way they'll be looking at that account in the future. I probably would contact the identity theft area and ask them if they are going to issue a number or ask if you can request a number, the identity PIN, and that way it would ensure that your return got processed rather than get holed up again in case it was out there again.
Mm. Makes good sense.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. And then you just, I guess if you're sending it in, you just put that PIN right on.
Right. There's a place on page 2 of the 1040 for the identity PIN.
Okay.
And that way they recognize that you're the real filer because the hackers are not going to have that.
No. All right, Tim in Sun Prairie, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
So we have a Flex savings account through our employer where we can save up to $5,000. And we were wondering, can we also deduct additional child care beyond the $5,000?
Depends on how many children you have. But you're saying you have the child care. The flex spending account would be medical, but this is the child care benefits.
Yep, that's correct.
Yes. The maximum that you can base a credit on is $6,000 if you have two or more children. So if you had two or more children, you would have $1,000 of additional amount that would qualify towards the credit.
Okay. Okay, and that's what we were wondering.
Yep. Anything beyond the $6,000 is a donation. I should say, a non-deductible event.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you so much.
All right. Let's go to Richard in Green Bay. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My wife and I are both senior citizens, and I wonder, and we both have IRAs and Roth IRAs, if I go to a nursing home, can they take my wife's IRA and Roth IRA also, or vice versa?
If you were to go to a nursing home, because this is a community property state, I, from a non-legal standpoint, I'm saying this, but I would say that it is community income that they would be looking at. Now, again, since it's not a tax particular thing, I would certainly check with a specialist. There are several elder care, what they call elder care attorneys or elder care specialists, and they would be able to tell you exactly how the law is. But again, because Wisconsin's a community property state, it may be different here than it is in a separate property state.
Yeah, but you're in Green Bay, and there are certainly professionals there that could.
Mm-hmm. I would certainly take a look at an elder care specialist and pose the question to them.
All right, there we go. Good luck, Richard. Thank you for calling. Mike in Galesville, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have kind of a peculiar situation going. I'm just starting to. I kind of freelance sell farm products, but mainly seed. And I've just started this business in 2016, and I'm not formally registered as a business. Can I use my Social Security number for that, and what deductions can I take? Because I've had to do a few IRA distributions to keep things going in this first year.
Okay. Based on what you're telling me, you are a Schedule C person. The Schedule C is an independent business owner. And I think what you're saying is that you haven't formed an LLC or any special entity. And with that, you would be filing a Schedule C, and as long as you do not have other employees that work for you, you can certainly use your Social Security number for that business.
Okay.
If you start hiring employees, you're going to have a special employer identification number that you will need to do your payroll reports.
Okay.
But as a sole proprietor, you can certainly file under your Social Security number. As far as the expenses related to your business, just in general, the expenses related to the business, travel would probably be the biggest one. I'm assuming that you're selling these by going to the people that are buying them as opposed to having a retail establishment.
Exactly.
Then your travel expense is going to be probably your largest expense. As far as the sales of the product, do you purchase the product yourself and have it available as an inventory, or are you kind of the middleman?
No, I'm more of a middleman.
Okay.
Exactly.
So then you're not going to have the cost of the product itself, but you're going
right.
to have all of the expenses, your travel being the largest, but things like advertising expenses, business
exactly.
costs. You may have an office and home deduction depending on
yes,
where
I do.
You do your work, those kinds of things. That, if you're not hiring employees, again, I think your travel is going to be the number one expense. And I might suggest that you keep a log with very detailed information.
Okay.
Makes good sense. All right, Mike, thanks and good luck. Appreciate your call. Tracy in Green Bay, it's your turn next. Hi, Tracy.
Hello. I am part of the buyback for the Volkswagen Audi clean diesel settlement.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm guessing, based on the timeline of my claim, that Volkswagen probably purposefully pushed off all of the funds going out from their organization until after the first of the year. And so I won't get my buyback until, or my amount, I won't trade in my vehicle back to them until after the first of the year. And so I don't know what tax changes and laws or whatever there will be, you know, for the 2017 filing year. But I guess I'm just wondering the taxability of that buyback amount. And, you know, the two options are either you can get it fixed and you get a $5,100 payout for, you know, to be made whole for all the years you own the vehicle, or you get that $5,100 and they buy the vehicle back from you based on the value in September of 2015. So I guess I'm just wondering how I claim that, if I have to claim it, because it's a being made whole kind of a thing.
I would say, based on what you're telling me, I have not seen the terms of the settlement itself. But based on what you're telling me, if you are receiving $5,100 over and above the either fixing of the vehicle or over and above the buyback on it, that $5,100 is taxable income.
Okay. Even though it's a being made whole for all of the, you know, the in essence that they lied to all of the consumers that purchased their product, and therefore we were getting this mileage we thought we were getting, you know?
Right. But it would still be your lawsuit settlements. The only non-taxable type of lawsuit settlement involves personal physical injury, and this is not personal physical injury.
No.
So that would make it a taxable event for someone who used the vehicles. You know, I don't know this, but you see that type of vehicle on the road, if they were used for business, they would already have taken a deduction for the business side of it, and this is just bringing them back to that. And to anyone else, you're getting money for something that you wouldn't have taken a deduction for anyway.
Ah, there you go.
I see. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Tracy. Appreciate the call. Linda in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hi. My question, I retired early from the federal government, and, well, I retired at 50. I get my annuity, but I'm 55 now, and I haven't, well, two questions. One, I know you can take a one-time withdrawal out of my, like, thrift savings, the 401k part of the program. But is that taxed at 20% then as opposed to 10%? And then I didn't know if I could start drawing on it or do I have to wait till I'm 59 and a half?
I don't know if there's any special rules for thrift savings as opposed to anything else. But if you're talking about general retirement rules, taking money out prior to your retirement age as a lump sum is a taxable event, and it's right. subject to a 10% penalty.
Is it only 10% and not 20%? Because I know they said I can withdraw once. See, I'm trying to find someone who knows the federal retirement program. I'm not in Washington, D.C. anymore, so kind of, they're familiar here, not so much always. So.
Mm-hmm. Unless they have some special rules, you don't, if you are annuitizing it, you will pay taxes on the income and
right.
not a 10% penalty. Even
yeah.
at any point in time where you annuitize it, that
I don't want to annuitize it at all. I just want to, you know, at 59 and a half, you can start drawing
at 59 and a half, you can at will draw on it without right. taking any without paying any penalty. Anything okay. prior to that,
it's
you're going
10%.
To pay a 10% penalty. The only one I'm familiar with the 20% penalty is when you put it into a simple plan. And you take it out within the first 2 years.
No, it's not that.
Yeah,
I'm just
that's
because
not
I
that.
Mean, I have this many, and it's like I'd like to, draw a little bit. But I wasn't sure because I left early, even though my minimum age was 56. But I was
that,
able to go after
the age that you can leave at and the age that you can draw it out without the penalty are two different things,
right,
generally.
I know they had some little rule about 55, but I wasn't sure if maybe that was like police or fire department.
If you were 50.
There are some special rules for the police and fire at 55.
Okay.
And if you separate from service at 55 and you take the money out, then that money also from an employer pension plan, there is an age 55 rule as well.
Yeah, because it's not my pension. It's just that they call their 401k plan in the government because it's the FER. They call it the TSP, the thrift savings.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to see.
But at age 55, if you separate from service and you're taking money out of that plan, and that might have been what the one-time thing that they were talking about, is if you're over 55 when you separate from service, then you can take it out without paying the penalty.
No, okay. Yeah, because they do let you do a one-time, take a bunch out,
and that may have to do with the rules of the plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I just got to find someone, I guess, because that was my thing. I have this money, and I wouldn't mind taking a chunk.
I know that. I know that the state of Wisconsin... for example, the University of Wisconsin system has had folks who are on federal retirement, if that's mm-hmm. what you're...
Because there was the FERS program, and then, like, in the 80s, it got changed. I'm on the FERS.
Yeah, you're on the FERS, and there are still people that are on the FERS. So you might just try the state of Wisconsin... or the University of Wisconsin system and talk to their benefits people because they would likely have very good answers for you. So I would, if you call UW-Madison, for example, and talk to them, you're probably going to get an answer. Pretty accurate one, to be honest. I'm part of that system, so I understand. That's who I'd go to for sure. Good luck, Linda. Thank you so much for calling. By the way, we have open lines again. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. We'll turn to Lynn and Verona next. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Larry and Mary.
Hi.
Given what's going on with the stock market right now, I would like to withdraw some money from a mutual fund that I've held for a very long time and make an extra mortgage payment before the end of the year. So I'm wondering one thing. I know that probably this withdrawal would be, I would be paying long-term capital gains, but I am reinvesting the dividends. Does that mean that I would need to also be paying short-term capital gains tax on that? That's my one question. And my second question is, do I need to be concerned about triggering an audit with the amount that I withdraw?
Okay, let's address the first question.
Okay.
The first question says that if this is a taxable investment and not inside an IRA.
That's correct.
Okay. So it is a personal investment type. Anytime you sell off mutual fund shares, you will pay a capital gain on it if it gains. And based on, generally the rule is first in, first out, so your oldest shares are going to come out first.
Okay.
So it depends on how far down the road of the stream of income that you go into it.
Gotcha. Okay.
So oldest first, and if you're just drawing, you know, if you're not drawing out the whole account,
yes,
it's definitely, you know, it's probably going to be in the long-term market.
Okay.
If you have to dip into the part that was earned within the last year, then it will produce short-term.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Now, as far as audit is concerned, just selling stock is not going to trigger an audit.
Okay.
All right.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thanks, okay. Lynn. Appreciate the call. And Rosemary in Genoa City, hello to you.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I just wanted to respond to the caller that was taking money out.
Mm-hmm.
He was 55.
Yep.
And I used to work for a congressman, and that's what their staff does, is answer questions like that. So just tell her to call her federal congressman, and they'll take care of her.
Oh,
very good suggestion.
Very good idea, Rosemary. Thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Mary Mellum, tax professional from Green Bay, Wisconsin. She and her husband, David, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your taxes today with Mary Mellum. I'm Larry Mueller. Mary is with Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals. She and her husband, David, operate and own it. They're enrolled agents. So she does a wonderful job. It's always great to have her come by. And we have lots of callers online, so we'll go to Dennis next in Black Creek. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Great, appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
I'm curious about becoming a charitable organization. My wife and I have rescued, we live in a country home, we've rescued over a dozen cats. We put them up, had them fixed, immunized them. And it can get a little costly. What do I need to know about becoming using this as a tax deduction?
Well, there's a difference between using it as a tax deduction and becoming a charitable organization. Mm-hmm. A charitable organization is what we call a 501c3 organization. It is. It requires that you file a Form 1023 requesting the ability to be a recognized charity. That means that donations to this organization would be tax deductible once you form the organization.
I see.
Keep in mind also that anything that the charitable organization buys belongs to the charitable organization, and if that charitable organization were to close, it would have to contribute its assets to another charitable organization. So you could never put money in and take it out once you've put it in. So just so you kind of remember that.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, so take a look at that 501c3 and see what you can come up with, Dennis. Thank you. Rick in Hartford, it's your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Say, my question is related to some poor advice I received back when they were first introducing the Roth IRA option.
Yeah.
Financial advisors were suggesting that I could put after-tax money into my traditional IRA and then the following year roll it into a new Roth account. And that, of course, wasn't the way the tax rules worked. So now my 401k was rolled into my traditional IRA, and it's a sizable retirement savings. And I have this minuscule after-tax contribution that resides in that account.
You have non-deductible contributions.
Yeah. So I have to file 8606 every year. I do a rollover. And if my children inherit my IRA someday, I'm imagining they're going to have to file 8606 as well.
And that's true.
Is there any way to get this out?
No, there's no way. Well, generally, there's no way to get it out. You can pay taxes on it if you want. You know, if it's more annoying doing the 8606, you can pay taxes on all of it, and the government won't be sad about getting extra money.
I see. Yeah, I thought that might have been a way out, but it's not quite that minuscule. I guess it would buy dinner out or something every year.
Well, oh. Yeah, that's the way to do it. The only other thing that I could say, if you're retired, you're probably not having an HSA.
Correct.
Okay, because there is a way to roll money into an HSA, and when you roll it, it takes your non-taxable money. Let's see. It takes your taxable money and leaves your non-taxable, so that's not going to help. It would be the reverse of what you want to do.
Oh, okay.
So that one wouldn't work out even if you did have it.
No. Sorry, Rick.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. All right. I knew there'd be some bad news here and there.
We can't be giving away the store all the time.
Susan in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. My husband and I declared Chapter 7 bankruptcy this year.
Okay.
It was primarily for business debt that we had personally guaranteed. And what I want to know is whether or not this would be counted as income when we file our taxes. It was for $357,000.
Bankruptcy is not a taxable event. I should say the debt cancellation from bankruptcy is an exception. And so it would not be that. However, if you have any tax attributes that you have acquired after this, you may have to give those up. And what I mean by that is if you had any capital losses or net operating losses or anything like that, typically they should have gone to the bankruptcy before, and you would have lost those.
Mm-hmm.
But in debt cancellation, you have to give those up to get this 357 free. And so as long as you've given up or don't have any extras left over, the 357 is essentially taxable, tax-free.
Okay.
Debt cancellation.
There we go.
May I ask one more question?
Sure.
We do have leasehold improvements that we have not claimed because our business was not closed as of last year. We closed it this year. And I wanted to find out if we would be able to claim those then. I know we've done it on other places that we have closed.
What you're saying is that you have undepreciated basis in those leasehold improvements and you're abandoning them?
Yes.
Okay. Then the abandonment would be a sale at zero, and you would free up that in the year that you abandon them.
Okay.
All right. There we go. All right. Thanks, Susan. Appreciate the call. Cindy in Belgium, Wisconsin, thank you for calling.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I inherited about $20,000 from an uncle this year, and then I distributed $9,000 of it to my siblings. Do I need to claim that as income, or how much would I claim?
Well, first of all, did you inherit it or did they?
I inherited it, but since they were not part of the will, then I gave them some of that money.
Okay. And you just said the operative word about the $9,000. You gave.
Gave it. Okay.
So that part of it has nothing to do with the picture.
Okay.
As far as the $20,000 in taxability, it depends on what kind of money this was. If it was a specific bequest, it's not a taxable event.
Okay.
If you were an heir of the estate and you are getting part of the estate that could be income, then there could be some part of it. Do you have, has anyone?
It was a dollar bequest.
If it's a specific bequest, then it's free, and there's no tax consequences.
Okay, yeah, it was just a specific dollar amount, and then the rest of the...
As opposed to being a beneficiary of the estate itself.
Right, the rest of the estate was, the beneficiaries were his son.
Okay.
And we were just bequested a specific dollar amount.
Yep, if you were bequested it, then it is a free and clear gift.
Perfect, thank you so much.
Yep, you're thanks welcome. So much for calling, appreciate it. Jeff in Hayward, hello to you.
Yes, thank you for taking the time.
Sure.
Here, my question is very similar to Cindy there. I am an executor of an estate, and the money or funds in that are in a revocable trust. Now it's come to pass that those funds are going to be divided up amongst a couple trustees, and wondering at what point, or is all that money as it's divided taxable, being that a portion of that money is from the recent sale of a home for the passing party, and a portion of it is just from a CD that the party had. So those are the two sources of income or monies that are in that trust.
Okay.
And now, as it gets divided...
You have a couple of things going on here. If you are the executor of the estate, where did this revocable trust you're talking about come from?
Well, from the person as...
Did the person have a revocable trust during his lifetime that became irrevocable at death?
Correct, yes. The person had it that upon his death, all his assets went into the
irrevocable
trust.
Okay. And then from that, where are the instructions coming that are dividing it into two different areas?
Those are from the setup of that will and trust.
Okay, that
he had.
Okay. In doing that direction of the trust, that property is going to pass into it. If the sale of the house generated any income, which they don't very often, but if it generated income, then whatever entity was in possession of it at that time would be reporting that sale and paying taxes on the income, essentially, or passing it out with the proceeds that are passing out, depending on your time frame. So just the creation of the two trusts doesn't make it a taxable event, but it's what goes on inside of whichever one. The CD is not going to create a problem, but the income that the CD earned would have to come to one of those resting points, depending on when it was earned.
Okay. Now, how does one determine if the selling of the residence, being that I know the home was owned for 50 years?
That has nothing to do with it. When a person dies, the value of the property on the date of death becomes their cost basis in it.
Okay,
and
so
that compared to its sales price, usually it will be a loss, and the IRS is not too keen on allowing losses on personal residence. So usually the best is a wash, you know, unless it's held on to for a long time and the market dropped or some extenuating circumstances. But rarely is there a gain.
Well, it was sold within about 4 or 5 months of the passing of the party.
And I would say that it's probably a wash with no gain or loss.
All right. Thank you.
To go forward through this into the coming year, would it be advisable to get a tax accountant?
I would certainly think that having someone deal with these trusts, because they're the filing of a Form 1041. It's different than your normal income tax return.
Yeah, it'd be worth a few hundred dollars to have somebody else looking at that and doing the work, I would think. That's what I'd do.
I would strongly suggest that.
Yeah, there we go.
Those monetary funds get divided out to the individual trustees. Now, is that taxable as income to the trustees then?
No. When you're splitting up and passing the income into the two divisions, that's not going to be a taxable event. If you have to sell something to put money into those, then you would look at the taxability of what you sold. But if there's no sale and there is just a division of assets, that's not going to trigger taxable income.
Okay. Even to the individuals receiving it?
Again, to the individuals, when they finally distribute it out, the individuals are only going to pay tax on any income that that monies would have made during that time.
Yeah, okay. Which is pretty minimal, I would think.
Depending on the size of the assets that are being passed out.
Yeah.
Sure.
But if anything has to be sold in order to make that distribution, then you have to check to see if there are any tax consequences of the sale.
Uh-huh. All right. There we go. Thanks, Jeff, for calling. Appreciate your call. Mary Mellum will be with us right up until 12:30 today to talk about your taxes. We're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we will be back with Mary Mellum. Stay with us. Well, if you thought that tax day is just about 4 months away, you're right about that. And if that raises your blood pressure, I can guarantee you're not alone. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Net. There are things you need to get done before the end of 2016 for it to count for this tax year, and some of them can make a big difference in how much you end up owing. Mary Mellum with us. She's a tax professional from Green Bay who's been in the tax business for more than 30 years. She and her husband, Dave, operate Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals, and it's always great to have her come by. Lots of callers online. There is one open line at 1-800-642-1234, so you can give a call. Mary in Brookfield has a question for us, Mary Mellum. Let's go there. Hi, Mary.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. This year I opened up an HSA account, and I understand you can deduct up to $3,300, but is that in contributions or in withdrawals?
It is in contributions. It is money that you put into your HSA account. You do not have to take any money out of it to get the deduction.
Okay. And then I have another quick question. So I now have the additional six-digit PIN that I have to put on my taxes for security purposes.
Okay.
But does that eliminate me from filing online?
No, that six-digit PIN will allow you to file online and for it to go through when you're filing online. So you have the identity theft PIN.
Yes, I do.
Okay. No, you can certainly file online with that.
Okay. I tried doing that last year, and I just couldn't get it to work. But I'll try it again this year, and I'll start earlier.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. Jameen in Madison gave her daughter $10,000 to help her buy a new home. What can they do with that tax-wise? Is there anything? She gifted her daughter.
A gift is not a taxable event unless the gift is over $14,000 to one individual, and then there is a gift tax return of Form 709 that needs to be filed to acknowledge the gift, basically. But there is no benefit to giving a gift. That comes on the tax return.
There we go. Clayton in Madison, thanks for calling. Hello. Clayton, are you there?
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm here. My wife's uncle passed away recently, and she is the beneficiary of an insurance annuity. We've learned that the portion of that that is taxable, so we have an idea of how much that will be. I'm assuming that if and when we receive the money, that we'll get a 1099-R from the insurance company, and we're trying to sort out, whether we should try to receive some of the money in this tax year We have an option to take it sort of as a lump sum or distribute it over up to 5 years. And so I've been looking at different scenarios for that. And I'm concerned about being sort of pushed into alternative minimum tax territory.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any thoughts on that?
Sure. Your alternative minimum tax, the income for that, $60,000, something like that, and a married couple. It used to be $45,000, and it has, you know, substantially gone up from there. But if that amount triggers your income to go over that, do you have other adjustments like miscellaneous 2% itemized deductions or large state tax or property tax deductions?
No, I mean, normally we just file our 1040 and we itemize with our, you know, our mortgage payments and
property taxes. Is your income high enough that you have ever experienced AMT before?
No, it isn't. And
what are you talking about, your share of this annuity? How much money are we talking about in that case?
It's about $110,000.
In total, if you were to take the whole thing?
The taxable portion is $110,000.
Okay. AMT may be an issue with it. Do you have other investments as well? Interest, dividends, those kinds of things. The reason I'm thinking that one of the things aside from AMT that may be an issue is the 3.8% net investment income tax. If your income, if your AGI is over $250,000, if you were to take it totally and add it to your other income, if that came over $250,000, there's a 3.8% net investment income tax that you could be triggering. That isn't an AMT issue.
Yeah, I don't think we'll be there with that. We have other investments, but
unless you have other oddities like high property tax, high taxes on your itemized deductions, or miscellaneous 2% deductions, AMT doesn't always kick in except when you have those things that have to be added back. So I wouldn't necessarily think that under normal circumstances that 110 is going to generate AMT. But if you have, again, high property taxes and taxes in general on your itemized deductions, or if you have miscellaneous 2%, then I would look into the calculation of the AMT before you make your option.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, some people may be wondering about the alternative minimum tax. Maybe you can explain that a little more fully.
Alternative minimum tax is a way to ensure that all people pay a certain minimum. And an alternative minimum tax is a 25, basically, there's two rates, 25 and 28. I'm not even giving you the right numbers for sure there. But what it's, I call it a parallel tax system. And it says that in our regular tax system, we have one set of rules. And in this AMT or parallel tax system, there's another set of rules. One of the rules is that you're not allowed personal exemptions. Another one is you're not allowed to deduct state taxes, whether they're withholding or property taxes. And there are some other adjustments for specialty items, like your passive losses have a different set of rules. Your NOLs have a different set of rules. But in the end, you come up with this alternative minimum taxable income, and there is an exemption amount. It is basically $45,000 indexed for inflation, and it's upwards of 60-some thousand now. You subtract it and you multiply that by your tax rate, which is a flat rate as opposed to a progressive tax rate.
Okay.
And so, you know, just using 25% as just an example, the tax rate would be 25% on all of the income instead of having a 10, 15, 25, 28% rate. And you're going to pay the greater of that or your regular tax.
Okay. So if you took them, if you say you made $100,000.
That's not going to do it in generally, unless you have lots of kids and you have lowered your income down substantially because you have 10 children. You could trigger AMT because of something like that.
I got you. Okay.
But itemized 2% miscellaneous itemized deductions are not allowed. So a person who is a traveling salesperson that has a great deal of mileage and things like that, that reduces their income tax, regular income tax, that would be added back, and they would be a candidate for AMT tax.
Gotcha. Jim in Minnesota, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I've done some maintenance on my solar hot water panels. It's almost $3,000. I wonder if any of that is deductible.
To the best of my knowledge, it is not. It's the installation of the panels that qualify for the credit.
Not the reinstallation after maintenance.
I do not believe, because you're not putting in more solar panels, you're just fixing what's there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I am not aware of any credit on the upkeep of it.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Tony in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Tony.
Thanks a lot for calling. Hello.
Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Yes, I sold my house this last year. Getting older, moved into town to apartment. What kind of taxes do I have to pay on my the money I made on that?
First of all, did you live in your home for 2 out of the last 5 years?
It's been better 25 years.
Okay. Did you? Was the sale more than $250,000?
No.
Then you should be able to exclude it. Have you ever used it for a business and taken depreciation on your home?
No.
Okay. Then I would say you need not worry about it because you qualify for the 121 exclusion.
Okay.
All right. You're in good shape there, Tony. Yep. Thank you for calling. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Donna in Kenosha, you're next. Thanks for calling, Donna.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a fully paid timeshare that I was unable to sell, so I deeded it back to the group I got it from. I was wondering if any of that would be deductible.
Did you use your timeshare for personal purposes?
Only once in 13 years.
But you did not collect rent on it other than that?
No,
okay.
No, I did not.
Then unfortunately, no. You have a sale of the timeshare for whatever they gave you, it probably resulted in a loss, and the loss is a non-deductible personal loss.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Dean has a question from email. If a couple has a trust with successor trustees that contains stock, is the cost basis of the stock based on when the last trustee dies or when the trust actually distributes the stock? So if both trustees pass away, yet the trust continues for a period of time, does that affect the cost basis?
There is a whole lot more that we need to know about that to answer it for sure.
Okay.
Let me just give an answer based on what I'm assuming he's saying. If a trust is set up as a revocable trust during the lifetime of the individual, then when that individual dies and the trust continues, the trust gets a stepped-up basis on that property at that time. If it's a joint trust, it gets a little bit muddier because it depends on how it's worded and what the ownership of the property inside is. If it's owned by one person and the survivor gets it, then it gets stepped up at that first person's death. And then when the survivor dies, depending on how the trust is, if it didn't become irrevocable, there might be a step up at that point as well. If it was an irrevocable trust made up while they're living, there is no step up. So
okay.
It all depends on where they are in that spectrum of ideas.
Yeah, makes sense. Jim in Burlington, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question regarding my wife is a minister, and I just have a question about the parsonage exclusion and also business expenses. At least from what I understand from the tax law, the parsonage exclusion can either be the combination of the expenses related to the parsonage, or another way of valuing it is to look at the rental value.
The law says it is that the amount that is excludable from income is the lower of the fair market value of the property, including furnishings, the amount that is set aside at the beginning of the year as a parsonage allowance, or the amount that was actually spent to maintain that parsonage.
Okay, so I do, even if I know our home would have a rental value that's more or at least equal to that exclusion, I still have to tote up a cost related to it, the property taxes.
You have to have a cost of everything that goes into providing that parsonage, whether it's being rented or whether it is being purchased. And with the purchase, it includes the whole payment, not just the property taxes. It includes the principal as well, the property taxes, if you paint, if you buy furnishings, if you have cable, all of those things go into your actual costs.
Okay.
All right.
Can I ask one other question?
Sure.
She is self-employed, which means that she works for a hospital system but does not pay Social Security. We pay that, we don't pay it through her paycheck.
Okay.
With respect to business expenses she has, I presume that the business expenses she has, she should deduct through the self-employment.
Does she receive a W-2?
Yes.
Then she's what's called a dual-status employee.
Uh-huh.
And as a dual-status employee, she's partly treated as self-employed, and she's partly treated as an employee.
Mm-hmm.
For her deductions, she's going to take those on a 2106, not on a Schedule C.
Mm-hmm.
The only time that she would have a Schedule C and take deductions against that is if she had other ministerial duties that created income, like performing weddings or other services where she's paid for that separate from her W-2.
Oh, okay.
And then you would have to allocate the expenses between the employee part of it and the extra Schedule C part of it.
Yeah, she doesn't have any Schedule C expenses.
Right. So her expenses are going to go on to 2106. And there's also a formula that only puts part of those expenses on 2106 because you have to go through the formula with the parsonage allowance and look at what's taxable income versus non-taxable. And a portion of it goes to the 2106, not the entire amount.
Okay, great. Right. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. And Vincent in Manitowoc, hello, thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Okay, my question is this. I'd like to know if I'm going to be paying taxes this year or if I'll be getting a refund. My spouse passed away 3 years ago. So she used to do the taxes. Now I'm doing them. My daughter, she just turned 18, so I've been claiming her up till now. I got the credit for her. And also, no insurance this year. So last year, I made $53,000. I ended up getting back, I think it was about $3,800 federal, and my Wisconsin state tax is about $600. I got a return. So this year, not claiming my daughter and having to pay the fine for, you know, not having insurance this year, was wondering, what do you think it's going to be? Is it going to be a refund, or am I going to pay?
Your income is $53,000.
Yeah.
Do you itemize your deductions?
No, I just, I'm a truck driver. I do TurboTax online. I just, you know, whatever my W-2 says, so.
Yeah.
And are you an employee truck driver, or are you self-employed?
Employee.
Okay. And so do you have road expenses? You know, are you gone overnight where you're claiming a per diem allowance?
Yes, I'm going Monday through Friday. I'm on the road.
Okay. It all depends on what your itemized deductions. Do you own a home?
No.
Okay. And so you may or may not itemize. If you don't itemize, the standard deduction would be $6,300. And if you're not, why is your daughter living somewhere else? Is she working on her own, or what's the deal with that?
Yeah, she's down in Florida now. She's going to move up here in March, but for now, yes, she's living on her own in Florida. She works on her own also. She's a waitress at Cracker Barrel. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So after, if you take standard deduction, which I don't know if you do or not, and you take personal exemptions, you're going to pay taxes on about $40,000. And at $40,000, you'd be in the 25% tax bracket. And it's a progressive tax, so it's going to depend on how much withholding that you have, whether that's going to make a difference.
I can't remember the number. If I make $1,000 every week, which I do pretty close, I usually end up with about $800. So, I mean, they take a good chunk out.
That goes for Social Security or FICA and Medicare. That doesn't tell me how much withholding you have.
Yeah.
It's just, I would plan on paying in. Let's just put it that way. Your penalty for not having health insurance is the greater of $695 or 2.5% of your taxable income. And if your taxable income turned out to be $40,000, your 2.5% of that would be $1,000. So you're looking at the penalty there.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, it's not enough information to be able to, you know, do your tax return over the phone. Let's put it that way.
Thanks, Vince, for calling. Appreciate it. Mary, thank you so much. It's a great pleasure, and I'll look forward to your next visit.
All right.
Wonderful job. Mary Mellum of Ashwaubenon Tax Professionals of Green Bay. KP Whaley's is the last day here with us. Thank you so much for all you've done for us here at Wisconsin Public Radio. He's on to new and greater things, as far as I can tell, and I really wish him well. And I wish you well as well. And I hope you'll join us tomorrow, because Santa Claus and his Mrs. Claus and an elf comes to join us on the Ideas Network.